men help me that I'm assuming you're going to read Philemon this week, so next week when I speak, you will be ready to go. It'll be a very simple sermon. You'll be familiar with all the ideas. May I encourage you to do something? Please look up here. When you read the Bible, drop your devotions. Just read the Bible one time. Way too much devotions is looking at verses which were not part of the original text, chapters which were not part of the original text, and you can read the book of Philemon and have no idea what it's about. What's the book of Philemon about? Well, it's about Paul that was in prison. Why was he in prison? Somebody, no, don't say it. Raise your hand and tell me. Why was he in prison? Yes. Yeah, but when? How did he get there? Specifically, he was in Rome. I mean, he was in Jerusalem. He appealed to Caesar. Then you have this long, circuitous boat ride. He finally gets to Rome, and then you get four books. So you got Paul in Rome, in some kind of imprisonment, and then a young guy shows up. I'm assuming Paul knew him or knew of him because Paul writes to the church. And by the way, when you read Philemon, boy, I won't ask any individuals that have been reading the Bible for 40 years, what other book is essential to read with it? Anybody? Colossians? Why? The same place. Most of the names that are mentioned in one's mentioned in the other. I mean, you know, we're talking about the same location. So Paul runs into a young man. That young man is a slave, and not only is he a slave, he has fled his master and stolen something. We know nothing about what he stole. In the process of time, that young man gets saved. And what does Paul do? Well, we're going to read tonight, but he sends him back, but he also sends a letter. And that's where it gets interesting. By the way, this part we'll talk about next Sunday night. Next Sunday morning, we're going to deal with an aspect of Philemon that's just a life changer for me. Verse 8 first. Wherefore, though I might be bold in Christ to enjoin thee that which is convenient or proper or right. He was an apostle. He could actually command you to do something. He says, yet for love's sake, I rather beseech you or beg you or, you know, that sort of thing. Being such an one as Paul the aged and now also a prisoner of Jesus Christ. I beseech thee, I beg thee for my son Onesimus, whom I have begotten in my bonds, which means he was saved when Paul was a prisoner. Which in time past was to thee what? Well, yeah, you know, if you're robbing your master and you're taken off, that's pretty unprofitable. But he goes on to say, but now profitable to thee and to me, whom I have sent again. Thou, or you therefore, receive him, Philemon. That is, and he has that wonderful phrase again. Focusing on his emotions, his tender passions, his heart. Verse 13, whom I would have retained with me, that in thy stead he might have ministered unto me in the bonds of the gospel. Paul says, I'd rather have kept Onesimus here because I needed somebody. Is that what it says? Verse 14, but without thy mind, and probably we wouldn't say it, without your opinion, without your counsel, I would do nothing, that thy benefit should not be, as it were, of necessity, but willingly. I think everybody here knows it's always best to do what we do because we want to and not because we... And Paul is pleading with him to do the proper thing because he wants to do it, not because he has to do it. For perhaps he therefore departed for a season, that thou or you, Philemon, should receive him forever. Not now as a servant, but above a servant, a brother beloved. Especially to me, but how much more unto thee? Meaning you've known him a long time. And he says, both in the flesh and in the Lord. If thou count me therefore a partner, receive him as myself. If he hath wronged thee, or oweth thee aught. One of the finest sermons I ever heard was this phrase by H.A. Ironside. Put that on my account. He drew from this phrase and talked about this is exactly what Christ does. Have we wronged God? Oh, yes. Christ says, put that on my account. That's Paul. By the way, Christ starts showing up in your life whether you want him to or not. I, Paul, have written it with my own hand, and I will repay it. Albeit I do not say to thee how thou owest unto me, even thy own self besides. Yea, brother, let me have joy of thee in the Lord. Refresh ye. I just love these phrases. Refresh my bowels in the Lord. Having confidence in thy obedience, I wrote unto thee, knowing that thou wilt also do more than I say. That's a beautiful statement. We're not going to look at this text. This will be next week. We're going to broaden this out and look at slavery as a broader phenomenon this evening in the New Testament world, and then next week focus more on the specifics of this text. Father, I thank you, and I ask you that you would bless as we read the scripture tonight and consider many things that are very important. We have many different ethnicities in this room. In this room right now, every single person, wherever they came from, at one time or another, people of their ethnicity has been enslaved by somebody. Slavery is one of the ugly, dark sides of human nature. But we can nod off to sleep because we're not enslaved and we have our TV and plenty of food. But yet, is slavery a problem? Would we know what to do? Would we know what the Bible teaches? Help me tonight to broach the subject. And we'll as we work forward next week to maybe come to some good, healthy places. This I ask in Jesus' name. Amen. You may be seated. Somewhere in the late 1970s, early 1980s, I read a book about that thick on the family of Saud. S-A-U-D, or the kingdom of Saudi Arabia. In this book, there's many things I remember about the book because basically Saud, whatever his name, whatever his last name was, he and his sons ruled Saudi Arabia up till very recently. And now it's degenerated into grandsons, etc., but it's just been in the last few years. Every single ruler of Saudi Arabia was either the old man or one of his sons. Well, back when this book was written, it talked about an incident, and I cannot remember the year. The USA was developing relations with Saudi Arabia, or the family of Saud. The prince, his name was Faisal. Mike Rock can tell you who Prince Faisal is. If you're under 40, 45, you have no hope of knowing. But Mike, in 1973, when you're a young man, you know Prince Faisal, King Faisal, because he was assassinated. And that was part of the whole mess with the oil embargo of 73, just a big mess. It was a disaster. Well, at that time, his name was Prince Faisal. He was coming over to the United States to have a state dinner in the United States. So Prince Faisal is coming. It's big news in the United States. This was way before my time. Things were planned out. Invitations were sent. The times and the receptions were organized. And dignitaries from around the world were invited. And then Prince Faisal arrived in the United States with two white slaves. And it caused a major uproar. Because America, it's been illegal to have slavery since 1865. And I think this was during Roosevelt's time, and he shows up here with slaves. I know Tom back here will check me out. Most of you will sleep. I'll let you check me out. Slavery was finally done away with in Saudi Arabia in what year? 19, the next one's a 6. Tommy will tell you the. I know, but I'll let Tom look it up because he likes to look things like this up. By the way, may I say this? It'll do you a lot of good to look up some slavery this week on Wikipedia and do some reading, because what you're going to find is we still have a lot of slavery around the world. We'll talk about that as we move forward. Most Americans were and are unaware that slavery was practiced in many Muslim countries and actually still is practiced in quite a few Muslim countries to this day. So when we talk about slavery in the Bible, we must understand there are many Muslim countries that still have slavery, and I'll mention one later. And of course, when I say practice, you know, slavery, I'm talking about officially practice it. There's many more that practice it unofficially. So when we come to the New Testament, look at the basics of slavery in the New Testament. Number one, slavery was the reality. Friend, every place you look in the New Testament, the words for slavery is found, and slavery would be as common as walking in Chicago and seeing people of different ethnicities. Now, when I was in Bible college, the land of the fools and uneducated, I actually heard a sermon on this text we're going to read. Whew. King James only nuts. It's always nice to be able to actually know what you're talking about. Look at the verse. It says, "And Stephen, full of faith and power, did great wonders and miracles among the people. Then there arose certain of the synagogue, ektes synagoges, out of the synagogue, which is called of the Libertines." I'm not kidding. I actually heard, and I won't want to say who it was, say this was a synagogue of liberals. Libertinos, my friend, look at me. In Jerusalem, look up here, there were so many slaves in Jerusalem that they had a synagogue for slaves that had gotten their liberty. Did you hear that? So they not only had slaves in the synagogue, they had a synagogue for nothing more than freed slaves, those that had been giving their liberty. That's a lot of slaves. Yes? That's in Jerusalem. By the way, slavery was so common in the Greco-Roman world, it was every place you went. So, you know, being pious and religious won't really take you out of the debate. This was just common. Yeah, libertine. Oh, my goodness. Freed slaves. Libertinon. Let me give you some basic thoughts about slavery was the reality. First of all, records were either not kept or have not survived. You know, you wouldn't expect something from 2,000 years ago to have survived to this day, especially records of how many slaves and that sort of thing. We do have pieces of stuff here, there, and yon, but we don't have real records. They either weren't kept or they haven't survived. Next, the numbers of slaves varied from province to province. So in one province there were one, in another province they were something else. Next, the kinds of slavery. There were many kinds of slavery in the ancient world, also varied greatly. And I mean, this is one that I won't spend time with tonight except to read the verses. There was just lots of kinds of slavery. Look up here, friend. There was slavery like this. In Philippians chapter 1, it talks about, in chapter 4, it talks about Caesar's household. What's interesting, if you read it in Greek, which I'm going to, if you look at Philippians 4:22, it says, chiefly they that are of, those that are out of Caesaros Oikias, the household of Caesar. But when you say it in Greek, it sounds more like, listen, Kaiser. Where do you think the word Kaiser comes from? Caesar. Or Czar comes from the same root with a K sound. Now, there were slaves in Caesar's household. You say, I don't want to be a slave. To be a slave of the Caesar in most cases was to be in a place of tremendous privilege because you were part of the family of Caesar, and that was very prestigious. So you could be in the household of Caesar. In Philippians 1, it uses a different word. It talks about the palace, the praetorion, which is the praetorian guard, or the palace, or the people, and there might have been slaves there too. Then there were slaves like in Romans. I don't know about Acts 12. In Acts 12, it talks about their chamberlain. The chamberlain of the king, having been made Blastus, the king's chamberlain. Does anybody know what a chamberlain is? Raise your hand. We're just going to do this because I want you to. What's a chamberlain? Yeah, it started out with what's the place that the king has to have protected? His bedroom. Because you don't want to get assassinated. It became the most privileged person. In some situations, this guy might have been a slave, but he would have been a slave that was attached to the king, so he'd have been an important guy. And he had a very privileged position. He may or may not have been a slave here. Now, it uses the same word, but it's a different Greek word later. And by the way, in the Greek, in Acts 12:20, it does mean the bedroom. But Jim, I don't think it was the bedroom. I think it was probably the person that took care of his inner business and maybe protected him. And in Romans chapter 16, this guy was absolutely a slave. It says, Gaius, my host, and the whole church saluteth you, Erastus the chamberlain. But it uses a word that means the manager, oikonomos, the one that manages the city. This would have meant the city manager. Look at me. In the Roman world, in these provinces, a city manager was required by law to be a slave. Why? Because they didn't want him running off with the money. So he didn't have freedom to travel. He was very wealthy. He was powerful. But he was one form of slavery. So you had slavery from one extreme to being, someone on the inner circle of a king, the family of a king, to the treasurer or the person that controlled the city's money. Those are pretty good slaves. You went to the extreme opposite. If you were a slave in the mines of Rome, they said the average lifespan was 1 to 3 years. They sent you to that form of slavery as a form of really the death penalty. So you had slavery that was this wide, that was really prestigious and powerful in money, to many kinds of household slaves, all through this center part, and then to the extreme left where you died. By the way, if you were a slave in a mine, that was a death sentence. If they made you a slave and sent you to the fields, that was a death sentence. So basically, that was the form of slavery that you had. Tom, 1962? Yes. Saudi Arabia, you know that godly country that we're always kissing? Got rid of slavery in 1962. By the way, and they actually kind of got rid of it. We'll talk more about that in a moment. So, records were not kept or have not survived. Numbers varied from province to province. And the kinds of slavery, everybody got there was many kinds of slavery. Number four, the numbers were, and this is broad range. This is not something I dreamed up. I've read this in many sources. About 1 of 8, meaning 1 of 8 people in most areas. So if you went to Jerusalem, probably they think 1 out of 8 people was a slave. So let's look. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Louis a slave. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Atong's a slave. 1 out of 8, folks. Now, in Rome, they believe 1 out of 3. Why does this make a difference? If you do any reading in Roman history, you're going to learn something. They did not allow slaves to wear the same. They didn't have slave clothing. Why? Can you imagine 1 out of 3 people's a slave, and they all knew they were a slave, and they were all wearing slave clothing? You're going to have what? So they made sure that the slaves all dressed differently and dressed like their local houses. 1 out of 3, they believe people. But by the way, hold on, take a breath. We're not discussing slavery in the American South. We're talking about in the biblical world, where it could be anything from very prestigious job. Where if you wanted this job, you gave up your freedom to travel, you were a doulos, a form of a slave, in order to be the city manager, all the way to slaves in the field, to which was a death sentence in a few years, to absolute death sentence, which would be someone in the mines. And of course, in a little bit less than that would be the gladiators. They were slaves. A lot of slavery in the Roman world. Lots of slavery. That's just an introduction. Number two. Slavery was the norm or reality throughout history and across cultures. It was the reality in the New Testament era, and it was the reality throughout history and across cultures. This is Ralph Warren's statement. I cannot or have not found a major culture that didn't enslave, at least enslave other cultures. Did you hear that? Now, friend, if you do any reading by American liberals, which means American universities, the only bad country that ever existed was the United States. But if you actually read about other countries, this is what you're going to find. I don't care where you look. If you get a big enough, you know, I'm not talking about three people, but you have a culture, and that culture might not, they might be against slavery, but they're not against enslaving other cultures. So no, you can't enslave me, but we can enslave them. It just seems to be what humans do. Plus, you have a worse problem. I think this is Shakespeare, isn't it, Mrs. Warren? A rose by any other name, and I think it's still smells as sweet. Isn't that the quote? Well, we paraphrase that. A rose by any other name is still a rose. By the way, a slave by any other name, I'll say it again, a slave by any other name. So, can I ask questions? Well, I should call on people, but people will get embarrassed. Did we have white slavery in this country at the beginning? Did it cause us problems? Let's ask the bigger question. What state in the Union, wasn't the Union at that time, was slavery of whites the most common? This isn't a trick question. Call Virginia. And what was the problem? By the way, they didn't call them slaves. Oh, no, we're against enslaving white people. They called it indentured slavery or indentured servitude. So you were in England and you were a poor young guy and you wanted to get out of this poverty, so you went up to another guy that had money going to Virginia, and you went to Virginia and you worked on his plantation for 7 years. And at the end of 7 years, you were supposed to be, two things were supposed to happen. You were supposed to be given your freedom and you were supposed to be given the wherewithal to take care of yourself. Do you all know anything about American history? And what was the problem? Well, they kind of did that, but they weren't given their rights. Folks, slavery by any other name, slavery. And there's lots of names. I remember reading somebody about Russia. They said, we never had slaves. And I'm like, serfs? My goodness, to be a serf in Russia was as bad as any slavery I ever heard of. You couldn't leave. You were bound to a small piece of land. People could abuse you and misuse you. So in your notes, there were serfs, bondservants, servants, indentured servants, and probably other names that I don't know about. Next, slavery was and is invariably economic. It's about money. So anybody that's defending slavery at any period of time is always going to be talking about money, because that's what it's about. So slavery was the reality in the first century. Another way of saying it, it was the reality every place, always. Thirdly, slavery could not be changed directly and easily. I say in your notes, sometimes writers will criticize the Bible or Paul for not condemning all forms of slavery, which I find kind of funny. I say in your notes, Paul had no universal military power. So if Paul said, I'm against slavery, it would just be speaking into the wind because he didn't have the ability to change anything. Next, Paul did deal with the problem, and we'll talk about it tonight and next week, indirectly. He certainly dealt with it indirectly, but folks, to overthrow a system, Christians didn't have the ability to do that. Next, eliminating slavery required much more than eliminating the institution are passing laws. Eliminating slavery required much more than eliminating the institution or passing laws. I want everyone to look at me. Now I'm going to talk about American sin. You don't mind me talking about American sin. Look up here. My family fought in the Civil War, bunches of them on the side of the North. Yes, we were Northerners. We weren't Southerners. We were against slavery early on. But may I say this? Abraham Lincoln was assassinated. You know what the saddest thing in American history to me? It wasn't slavery. It's what happened after slavery ended. We went right back to enslaving blacks, but we called it something else. And it was because of the racism of whites in the South. And it was because, look at me, money. They called it, you'll know the term, sharecropping. So ended up, most of those blacks ended up working where? Same place they were working before they got out of slavery. And what did they have? Nothing. They work. Yeah, they probably weren't beaten, mistreated. Look at me, friend. When I see the nonsense I have seen how blacks were treated in the South, I told you, recently I took my mother, I think my wife was with me this time, we took my mother out to eat. I'm sitting right across the table from my uncle, Uncle Florin, not Florin. He's gone. Uncle Kook. He's the oldest Custer boy. He's 80, a little over 80. Uncle Kook said, we were just talking about the race issue. Now understand, where I grew up, it's not perfect. We'll talk about that in a minute. Oh no. But we grew up with black people. I never heard in the churches, I never heard the racism I heard in Southern churches. And by the way, we'll never have that filth in this church as long as I'm here. We're not playing those games. I was asked a question this morning. See, some of you are sleeping in the morning. Some people actually listened this morning. I had a guy come up and ask a question. I'll get to it in a little bit. Uncle Kook was in the United States Army in the 1950s. He was on a base. I don't know what the name of the base is. He told me, but I forget. Uncle Kook said, I was in a base. It was either in Louisiana or Mississippi. He was a young guy. He didn't call. He says, this is his term for himself. He says, I was just a country hick. I'm down there, and he says, I know nothing about the South. I've never been out of Illinois before. He gets down there, and he says, after a few weeks of being there, he's out of boot camp. He's down there with the Army. And he says, I get on a bus. And the front end, the front half of the bus is empty, and the back half of the bus has black people on it. And he says, I get on the bus, and a bunch of the Army guys get on the bus, and they sit down. And he says, I see a young lady here, black young lady, a mother with a baby. And he says, come here and sit down. Now, you have to understand, this happened to my uncle when he was in his teens. He's in his 80s. You could still see the emotion on his face. He said to me, he says, I didn't know what to think because he says that girl just looked at me and said, because God forbid that a black person would set where a white, oh, right in the midst of Billy Baptist in the South. You ever wonder why I hate Southern Christianity? The fakeness of all that God bless you talk while underneath Christianity doesn't ever take hold. If you're going to be a Christian, be a Christian. If you're not, no problem mistreating people like that. By the way, all I ever think of is this. I think, what if that was my mother? Oh, all of a sudden that starts changing things, doesn't it? Or what if that was my daughter and she couldn't sit down because she's the wrong what? You say, that doesn't happen in America today, does it? We got racism among blacks today too. I get it. I'm not stupid. But my friend, racism stops here. I got news for you. In this church, racism doesn't take root in two places. Number one, in your home, and number two, in this church. I can't do anything about the stupidity of society. All I can influence is my family and this church and our school. Anyhow, I better move on. I'm getting to ranting and raving. In your notes, Paul had no universal military power. He did deal with the problem indirectly. Eliminating slavery required much more than eliminating the institution or passing laws. The question becomes, this is what happened in the South. So you've had a civil war. What do you do with the people? Abraham Lincoln had ideas, but by the way, most of the people in the North had no ideas. They just thought, free the slaves. Okay, what do you do? They didn't have jobs. They didn't have homes. They didn't have educations. They didn't have skills. And then the question is, how do you change hearts and minds? Mauritania. Are you guys ready for this? You know where Mauritania is? North Africa? Are you ready for this? Mauritania is what kind of a, what is its religion? You want to give you a guess? Muslim. Mauritania outlawed slavery in 1905, 1981, 2007, 2015, and is the latest information, and there are still 600,000 people enslaved in Mauritania. How do you like that? Hey, look at me. Look at me. Let's be racist. Who cares? That's not me. That's those black folks over there. Well, that's your racist attitude. And let me say this. When I heard Jackie Boy Hiles talking racism, it was wrong then. When I heard Bob Jr. talking racism, it was wrong then. I don't care what you call yourself. By the way, if you call yourself a Christian, do this. Look at me. Take your wife. Take Jenny Lynn. She's in the back of the bus. That makes me enraged, doesn't it you? Yes or no? Come on, folks. Just put people you love in that back of the bus being mistreated. Racism ends real quickly. Just think if that's your mom or your daughter or your sister. I don't care if I'm in the back of the bus. As long as I have something to eat, I'm good. Number four, slavery was changed. And I'm going to give you three big ways tonight, and next week we will focus on this in another angle more specifically. But it was changed. What do I say? What do I mean by indirectly? Look up here. It doesn't do you. Mauritania keeps outlawing slavery. What's the problem? Haven't changed the heart. Haven't changed the culture. So you can outlaw slavery, but you just get slavery by another name. By the way, hatred, discrimination, all of the ugly things we do to one another. Now, we're going to read some verses, but let's start with this. At the end of the service today, a very dignified guy, maybe the most, I could be wrong, but I think the man in this church that has the most dignity. When he walks into a room, he walks into a room very straight, very dignified. Young. Young Vifonzi. Have you ever watched how he walks? He's not a behind dragger. He walks in straight up. By the way, he runs. He's a sharp fella. He's a boss in what he does. He's as good as anybody. But hold on. He came up to me and said, Pastor Warren, I know we're against slavery, but he says, you know, I have a son. He's going to grow up. And he's going to see a lot of people discriminate against him. For one reason. And I looked at him and I said, brother, I don't have an answer except this. In this church and in my home, that's not how we're going to live. In any place we have influence, we're going to speak differently. How about, look at me, how about your home? You say, Pastor, can you be a racist and be a member of our church? I think you'd have a hard time. Can you be against certain ethnicities? Only Bicolanos. Other than that, nobody. Some of you don't even know what that means. Louis! Oh, excuse me, Louis is an American, so that doesn't count anymore. In your notes, how did Christianity change things indirectly? First of all, by certain transformative or transformational text. Look at the next page. Frenchie didn't do a very good job of copying this verse. Matthew 7:12, therefore, all things whatsoever you would that men should do to you, do you even so to them. Do you know, folks, please look at me. Do you know John Mason Peck, when he was asked about slavery, he says, I only need one verse. Do I want to be enslaved? Answer? Well, if I don't want to be enslaved, then why would I want to enslave someone? Isn't that simple? Christianity started transforming the world, not by passing laws and having wars. It simply said, I know how I would want to be treated. And by the way, in some ways, for me, I don't care how I'm treated. Because I, you know, if you call me whatever, I don't care. But if I look around here at some of the young girls and the young ladies and the mothers, I care how they're treated. And I know this, I'd want them treated properly. Therefore, I treat, is that simple, yes or no? All right, let me ask a question. How was it that I went to a Baptist church in Georgia where the pastor was racist from the pulpit in 1975? Tell me how. And I heard racist jokes in a Baptist church. I've had kids in my Bible class ask, you know, about racism. I said, well, in Lake County, it's pretty hard to be racist. We got too many racists. Who are we supposed to be against? Well, except Bicolanos. We can still be against them. Luke 6:31. As you would that men should do to you, do you also to them likewise. Leviticus 19:18. This is the last part, but thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. And by the way, and what happens in the New Testament? Well, who's my neighbor? We'll get to some of this next week. Matthew 22. But when the Pharisees had heard that he had put the Sadducees to silence, they were gathered together. Then one of them, which was a lawyer, asked him a question, tempting him and saying, well, Master, which is the greatest commandment in the law? And Jesus said to him, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is likened to it. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. I mean, to me, you know, you get the golden rule and you get the concept of the great commandment and the second commandment, and you pretty much got it figured out. Now, I'm not going to read it, and by the way, and somebody messed up. Frenchie. How did that happen? I have it in my notes, but not in here. Frenchie messed it up. You need to write Luke chapter 10, verse 36. In Luke chapter 10, by the way, I'll let you read this. This is called the parable of the good what? Samaritan. Please look up here. Here's the question. One of these people, wanting to justify himself, said, well, who is my neighbor? In 1857, we had the Supreme Court of the United States decide that black folks were only 3/5 human. Why? Because if you say they're human, you have to treat them like humans. We had churches in the South and slave owners that would not allow blacks to learn to read. Because if they could learn to read, that means they have a brain. They wouldn't let them go to church, some of them, because then they might get saved. And if they become your brother in Christ, you're in trouble with all your racism. Uh-oh. We'll move on. By the way, it's Luke 10:36. He then tells the parable of the Good Samaritan and says, well, that's the wrong question. Who is my neighbor? The better question is, who are you a neighbor to? Genesis 1. And God said, let us make man in our image, after the likeness, in our image, after our likeness. That's called the Imago Dei, correct? The image of God. Look at me in the eyes. Look at me in the eyes. Yet some Christians posited, not in this church, Walter is doing an outstanding job in Sunday school, by the way, posited between Genesis 1:1 and Genesis 1:2, there was this other whole creation and destruction, and some races said black people came from those people. So they didn't share the image of God. God bless our filth. By the way, I believe every human bears the image of God. That's the reason we treat people in a certain way. You say, why? Because they bear God's image. Let me move on. I think Paul, indirectly, and others in the whole Bible, started to change the institution of slavery slowly and indirectly by certain transformational texts. Secondly, by changing the nature of slavery. Now, friends, the King James does not do a good job of translating these terms. Look at me. If you're a King James only person, get over yourself and listen. And that's all fine, but the King James Bible has a problem. They translate every time these words incorrectly, because in 1611 in England, they did not have slavery. So they'll generally translate the word doulos, servant. But they're not talking about a servant, they're talking about a slave. So when you see the word doulos, that word means slave. Diakonos is the word for servant. Look at, and we're just going to read, let's just read the Colossians one, would you please? Colossians 3. Servants, hoi douloi. Slaves, that's the Greek word for slaves. Obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service as men pleasers, but in singleness of heart, fearing God. And whatsoever you do it heartily as to the Lord and not unto men, knowing that of the Lord you shall receive the reward of your inheritance, for you, By the way, again, that's the verbal form. You are slaving for the Lord Jesus Christ. Wait a minute. Who's the slave here? And then we go down to chapter 4, verse 1. Masters, hoi kurioi, kurios, the word for lords. Give unto your servants, your doulos, the slaves, that which is equal and just. Why would you do that? Knowing that ye also have a master, you have a kurios in heaven. Everyone look at me. I want you to write this down. It's not in your notes. If you don't want to write it down, do whatever you want to. For an unsaved person, there were two people involved in slavery. I'm the master, they're the slaves. Paul transforms that foolishness. He says, nope, there's the slaves, there's the master, and then there's the real master. And guess what? The moment you realize you have a master in heaven, please look at me, whether you own slaves or whether you run a business, it changes everything. Because all of a sudden, I'm not just answerable to myself for the bottom line. I'm answerable to the Lord of heaven. And the Lord of heaven will call your stupid into account. Yes? So, by the way, I've been in the churches where the pastor is a pope, a Baptist pope. The very thing Jesus says not to be, kurios, it's the word kurios, and you're a lording it over people. You got to realize, folks, no matter what you do, there's always somebody over you. You say, who is that? The Lord of heaven. Get that through your head. So how did Christianity begin to change slavery? And I'm not in it. By the way, slavery has been gone in many countries. Christianity made a big difference. It did it by certain transformational texts. The golden rule, loving your neighbor as yourself. Who is your neighbor? The Imago Dei. It also changed the very nature of slavery. They say, look up here, say it one more time and we'll be done. Here it is, this simple. It added a person to the slave and the slave owner, which is the Lord of heaven. Once you add that person, you can't be a fool anymore because you realize I'm answerable to somebody. Lastly, by changing or transforming the nature of slavery. The language of slavery. The language of slavery. The strangest thing happens in the New Testament. Now, I'm not going to read a single verse. I just want you to listen. These are all here for your benefit. When you go home, you can meditate on these. The greatest text in the Bible, Jesus uses language that you listen to and go like this. There is no person in the first century that would have yawned. Because when Jesus said, you know, if you want to be great, you don't do it like the world does. Because the world does it in a way to do what? Lord it over people. He says, if you want to be great, be a diakonos, servant. If you want to be first, look at me, be a doulos, a slave. And these people are thinking, huh? And then Jesus says, oh, by the way, I didn't come to have people serve me. To people deacon me. I came instead to be a deacon or a servant and to give my life. All of a sudden, the very language of the Bible is turning this upside down. And all of a sudden, you're realizing if you think because you're the big shot on your job that you're the man, well, first of all, you have a master in heaven. And second of all, the greatest of all is the slave. So you're a nobody. And by the way, if God puts you in a position over people, guess what you're to do there? Well, let's look. Let's look at the last three verses in Colossians. I just put them there for language only. Servants, ha, douloi, that's plural, folks, for doulos. And you slaves, that's the word for slave. Colossians 4:1, masters, give unto your servants, your slaves, doulois. But in Colossians 4:12, in the same book, Epaphras, who is one of you, a doulos Christou, a slave of Christ. By the way, do you think these slaves were hearing something? If the greatest of all is the servant and the slave, then who's greater, the slave or the master? And Paul, in the whole New Testament, Paul most of the time calls himself, look at me, a doulos, a slave. Slave of Jesus Christ. So we have texts that change everything. We have the very nature of slavery change gradually because you would put God in here and all of a sudden the slave is doing things differently and the masters realize, I got to do things differently too. And then we change the whole nature of the language and we start saying, slaves are good. We're all slaves of Christ. This is my introduction to the issue of the New Testament and slavery. It was the reality. It was the norm and reality throughout history and across cultures. It cannot be changed directly and easily. It can only be changed indirectly and slowly by certain transformational text, by changing the nature of slavery, and lastly, by changing the language of slavery. Father, thank you for this time. May you bless our efforts tonight.